Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 47 of the Nerd Cantina Show. Today, we have a cantina conversation with Bill Clay. Bill is a network security ninja over at Cisco who has worked with state and federal governments and brings us a great conversation that covers a lot of scary topics. We discuss nations' attempts to hack us, talking China and Russia, as well as the modern techniques that are being used to attack individual citizens. This is a really eye-opening conversation with some actual tips that you can put into play to protect yourself. So stick around for the conversation.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
Nerds, welcome to the next episode of the Cantina Conversations, and today we have a good friend of mine and a fellow Cantina member, William the Clay the Third. He is our resident tech expert and overall just good nerd buddy of mine, and we brought him on the show today to give us kind of a tech 101. Welcome to the Cantina, Bill.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So today we're just going to go over a little bit about Bill's background and his what he does for a living, just so you guys kind of know his expertise. And then after that, we'll go into a little bit of kind of tech security 101 for all our Cantina members. So if we all know that most likely you are sitting at home with a router of some sort and have at least 5 to 10 devices streaming and talking to your internet all at once. So we're going to go on how you can stay protected and stay safe in this ever-increasing digital age. So Bill, with that said, why don't you give us a little bit about your background, what you do at work?
Yeah, sure thing. So my official title is a security architect with Cisco Systems. And I've been generally just a huge IT nerd for many years. My current title as a security architect, I also have some certs associated with that. So I'm a certified ethical hacker. You definitely have to know how hackers think to protect networks. And as a security architect, I primarily consult the local government and state government entities to try to help them understand what their risks are and ultimately get solutions in place to reduce risk, keep hackers out of the network, keep our elections safe, you know, our tolling systems, real estate systems, our judicial systems, all of that from getting hacked.
So yeah, you're basically the nerd guy in every crazy espionage movie that we've watched so far.
Pretty much. Yeah, I'm definitely at the consultative level. So, you know, and the amount of hacking I do right now is, you know, pretty much on myself and just to play around and learn. But no, I'm definitely that guy that they bring in at the technical level to try to understand, you know, a little bit about the hacker mindset and how, you know, hopefully we can all stay safe from some of the really evil people that are out there.
I love the term that you're a certified ethical hacker, because I mean, ethics can be shaped by a whole lot of different beliefs. So you could be an ethical hacker by conducting a certain level of attacks that would not be approved by everybody.
It's like the digital Batman.
Yeah.
No, and that's my favorite type of hacker, actually. You know, we call them black hats, gray hats, and white hats, right? And a lot of people think that's aligned to laws, but it's not necessarily aligned to law. It's aligned to ethics, because, big surprise, laws don't always align with ethics, right? Laws aren't perfect. A lot of people assume, hey, if something's illegal or legal, that means it's hard good or hard bad. Not in the mindset of the hacker. It's more of, what is your net impact? Are you taking advantage of everyone? Are you helping the globe? And no, spot on. There can be shady ways to get to a good end. And can you justify that? And that all falls under the realm of the gray hat, because a black hat is hard, unethical. I will take advantage of people to get my job done. It's usually people trying to extort people for money. The white hat hacker, which is truly what my role is today, is somebody that aligns to ethics to get what they actually hack along ethical bounds. And so that can be thought of as a pen tester or somebody who actually does legal heists. So one of my most favorite things ever is heist movies, right? People get paid legally to run heists. And those are white hat hackers. And the gray hats are, it's really that realm where sometimes you do non-ethical things in light of some kind of ethical end goal, right? And so it's definitely the vigilante.
The hacktivists that are out there hacking systems to expose people, expose corruption, do whatever that, whatever the framework they justify their hacking is.
Yep, that's the gray hat. You know, you're fighting fire with fire. Those are the vigilantes. And sometimes the people that, even though they're trying to do a good thing, can get wrapped up with agencies, right? And law enforcement, just like Batman.
No, that's us. So have you preemptively started taking Russian lessons now?
No, that would be a big help, man. Man, yeah. I tell you.
Would that be a help for identifying, or would that be a help for like your Snowden-like exile?
Right. Yeah, one of the two, but definitely identifying threats. Like, you know, who are our biggest opponents in the digital space? It's Russia, North Korea, China. Those three yep. big players are, and North Korea is kind of newer in that space, right? But those three we had a lot of trouble with, and they each have their own unique pros and cons of why we have trouble with them. But you know, spot on. I was there front and center when Russia was pounding on our front doors for the 2016 election. I was supporting one of our state governments. I'll leave unnamed for now, but during that week of the presidential election, they were being attacked specifically from Russian IP space very heavily. So I got to be in the forefront of trying to help them with that. And a lot of people will question, you know, it's a hoax that Russia tried to.
I was going to ask, are you puzzled? Are you puzzled why people still think that this isn't something that occurs? Like,
oh yeah.
You know,
it's so puzzling because a lot of people, they take it for hoaxes, or it's so technical, they can't believe it. Right. That, and you know, a lot of people say, well, you can spoof anything online. How do we know it's Russia? There's ways to prove it, right? The way that IP addresses work and attribution. So these agencies that call out, hey, we think North Korea hacked us. There is so much vetting going out to try to figure out what is the evidence behind it, that once we kind of point our fingers towards somebody, there's a lot behind there that a lot of people don't realize is going on to actually make that determination, right? So,
well, you have to be very careful as to who you throw accusations at. I mean, given that you're working with multiple government entities and things like that, you just can't throw out, you know, point fingers here and there. You really have to do your due diligence before you can even make assumptions like that. Am I correct?
Most definitely, especially when you're dealing with state-level hacks and federal-level hacks. You know, nation states versus nation states. That's the most sensitive thing. And a lot of people get stepped on by these nations fighting each other. And that's the world we live in today, where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was a bunch of script kiddies and hobbyists just trying to play around with each other. You know, maybe you'll get the one-off guy trying to make a name for himself. But in today's world, we have groups of hundreds of hackers working together on these very advanced, complicated pieces of malware that not only attack other government infrastructures, but also individuals themselves. And that's, you know, a lot of the major attacks that happened in the last couple of years, they were developed by nation states. Some of the own tools were developed by our own people and were accidentally released out into the wild. And now the hackers have turned these tools against us, and they're extremely hard for us to fight that. So that's kind of the world we live in now, is these nation states are really just the big gorillas in the cyberspace, and everybody is getting impacted by it.
Well, and I guess I would ask, like, you know, you can go back to just, you know, whatever cyber related action movies from the 90s and stuff, and still and find, you know, people trying to paint it that like our infrastructure, people could gridlock cities through hacking a system and all that stuff. Like, how much of our infrastructure is potentially exposed? I mean, is everything at this point in time connected in some way that can be exploited through some significant efforts, or is that all kind of just theatrical?
It is a little bit scarier than you think. In my mindset is, if a human made it,
scare
a human
us.
Can hack it. Pointless. that statement.
Let's all be scared for a little bit.
So, but it's all about what you're protecting and how hard is it to get at that target, right? And if there's a disparity where something's really chewy and I want that piece of data and the security doesn't match that, that's where you're going to get hurt. And then people waste a lot of money too, where their security is just top notch, but what they're protecting, nobody really cares about. So there's that realm out there. But even our most critical systems are penetrable, especially when you think about insider threats. You know, there's always a way in, and people think like our security systems are getting better, et cetera, but humans are always the weakest link. There's still a huge human to machine interface going on, right? So anything is literally hackable. And point blank, one hacker about 8 to 10 years ago actually did successfully one person get fully into the NSA and FBI. Now he didn't get into
full access.
Full access, but he didn't get into our defense level controls like the military. But in terms of those three-letter agencies, he was silently walking around doing his own thing for a while. One of the most famous hackers now put behind bars. But everything is hackable, and especially when we are hacking in hackable targets in other countries and then accidentally let our tools go in the wild. And that, man, that's really unfortunate. These Eternal Blue exploits about a couple of years ago, we let loose. Now North Korea is turning around and is making money out of our citizens by creating ransomware with these tools. So it's actually getting a little bit worse than it was, because we used to have all the super, elite tools. A lot of those tools now have been compromised and released. And there's a lot of, theories as to how that happened. But that's the world we live in. And I don't think, no system is safe. However, some systems are so hard to hack that the data is not worth it. Others are, the data is always worth it, and they will be consistently targeted and hacked. A lot of people don't realize that only about 10 to 18% of cyber events that occur actually make the news, because agencies are embarrassed, right? I'm not going to release any information about me getting hacked unless I have to, unless I legally am bound to.
Yeah, you even see it in the corporate level. We don't hear about these exploits, whatever else, until months or years after it happens. And that's that's involving us private citizens, the government, and any entity. I mean, they're absolutely never going to come out and say when it happens.
Exactly. They don't want to admit that people have success in doing this, and they don't, they don't want to show all their cards as well. But, from my perspective, in direct consultation with the government, they get hacked all the time. And it's actually getting worse over the last year. If you actually look at local governments and ransomware, I mean, have you guys ever heard of a city getting shut down in the last 2 years because of a cyber hack in the news?
No,
have you guys
ever heard of it? No.
Over 10 U.S. cities in the last year have been completely shut down, the entire city government, because of cyber hacks. But a lot of people, it's just not top of mind, right? I'm not surprised at all that you haven't heard about this. I'm sure inside of me, I know of the most egregious, worst things happening to society in the hacks that happened in the last 2 years. You guys might not have even heard about it, but it impacts us all. And it's some of the shadiest stuff that's going on right now.
And we actually take a little bit of pride in trying to be in the know of these things. We search out these kind of stories for our show and things like that. So that shows you how, down low they want to keep these events from the public actually knowing about them.
That's it.
While we're talking about the three major players and solo hackers and stuff, what is the motivation for a lot of these hackers? So I'm assuming Russia, most of it's political. China, a lot of it, I think, is economic. North Korea, is the Joker, I'm guessing. Just some people want to see the fucking world burn, and then you have the individuals, like you said, that do it for a certain notoriety or certain fame, what is like the major driver? What are they essentially trying to accomplish by doing these hacks?
Yeah. Each nation state is very unique in what they're doing. So I'll start there and then I'll go to the individual. The nation states, hacking and technology has become so proliferated in the world that it can be used for political leverage and gain, right? So starting with China, their main prerogative of hacking is stealing intellectual property from us and then coming to capital with that, right? And there's multiple companies, one of them is called Huawei. Have you ever heard of Huawei? They make phones.
We've talked about Huawei probably 5-6 times on our show.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, so you're there with us. They are legally not allowed to sell networking equipment in North America because of their history of intellectual property theft and backdoors that they're putting into their technology.
Now, we've talked about the fears with Huawei and have given our audience reasons as to why we agree with the American government and some of the dangers. Are we correct in being that fearful?
Yeah.
You know, with the corporate espionage and the backing of the Chinese government and things like that?
Yep, spot on. I've seen, you know, point blank where my company has taken Huawei to court because there's hidden commands we can run on our switches. We run the same command on their switch, and it even says our company's name, Cisco, on their switch because they literally copied our code verbatim and put it in. And it's actually 15 huge cases that have happened in the last two decades, my company versus Huawei. And, you know, a lot of that comes to huge amounts of money being paid back to Cisco, but it's their common mantra of, you know, there's companies that they're breaking into that don't realize that China's in there, stealing their intellectual property and coming to market with products before them, right? So it's about competition and capitalism to try to gain that foothold for them. And they're ruthless about how they do it. And they have so many people. They have 20 cybersecurity individuals for each one cybersecurity person we have in this country. And that's just...
Damn.
Yeah, they have armies, really.
So my answer to China, which Ken doesn't necessarily agree with, has always been like, well, if they're stealing our shit, why don't we just steal their shit too?
Right. So there is a little cloak and dagger that goes on, but it's mostly around the realm of espionage from the point of political gain. So definitely America hacks back and we have our own hacks. However, there isn't a large play into intellectual property theft from a private sector standpoint. There definitely is potentially they're trying to get into our missiles and, you know, some of our military designs. And we're trying to get and steal others, but it's very rare, or I don't ever hear of the instance where some of our private companies are getting a leg up because of intellectual property theft that we're stealing. Not to say that it doesn't happen, but it's definitely not something that is proliferated even globally amongst other countries' news. You don't really hear about that, but we definitely do get inside of networks and do some stealthy research.
Well, China's propped up an entire economy based on stealing everybody else's shit, you know, and I always just wonder why the United States government just doesn't steal it and then open source it to every American company as just like a gift. Like, hey, they're fucking with us.
At that point, we're just borrowing it back. They already stole it from us. Then we're just borrowing it back. It's this cyclical thing here.
It gets reused. Yeah. Us too. We have a lot of the skills around unique ideas, right? We're the forefront of technology makers. You know, designed in California, made in China, right? That's a common thing that happens. So we have a lot more stuff to steal. However, they do. You know, I can think of one thing that they're killing it on us versus us. It's cellular panels, right? They're solar panels, extremely low cost. They have the technology beyond us. You just don't see us going after that. And the good thing about America is our play is at least publicly have to have an ethical face because that's how people vote and that's how our government is run. Where these other countries, they literally do not have to have that. They can say that we are ruthless because we believe that is right and our country is right. So our citizens wouldn't have a backlash of us stealing IP from other countries.
Well, yeah, I'm ready to go savage. I'm ready to go full savage on China. Well,
we've talked about the fact that so China is beautifully exploiting our capitalist principles in order to further their economic stranglehold on everybody else. Like they know that we're going to use capitalism, we're going to use ethical capitalism, and they can use those same principles in order to buy our debt, in order to crush our companies, in order to what we've seen with like the freedom of speech issues, whatever else, in order to manipulate our behavior through capitalism by benefiting the communist country.
And that's my whole point is where the fuck is our ethics going to get us when China takes over the global economy? Are we going to be sitting second tier in potato line saying, well, at least we didn't steal anything? Like, no, fuck you. Like, steal that shit. I don't give a fuck.
Our only hope is what we're trying to do, which is our allies and us band together to block them from sales. Because if they're not going to play to our rules of capitalism, which is an open free trade market without this, you know, intellectual property theft, then you're out, right? The only problem with that is they're really big in emerging markets because those laws and those alliances don't exist, right? There's actually, they give their gear away free to African governments. And an African government.
I was going to say, they're propping up African nations.
Yeah. And then the African government, there's reports of saying, yeah, there's like huge swaths of data coming from our network, like in the middle of the night going to China. We can't understand what in the code is making this happen. And then Huawei's like, oh, you're fine. You know, it's just some back end processes. And there's a lot of that stuff going on where they're trying to get their gear out there because they don't play nice. They act like they're trying to play nice, but they really aren't. And the world's starting to wise up to it. So I hope we can fight them outside of the realms of capitalism, right? And just say, you're not allowed to sell in XYZ.
Well, it's the same reason why you get a free Alexa or Google Home when you purchase anything else, because they don't give a shit about the cost of the Alexa. They just want to know what the fuck you're talking about every day so they can target you with ads.
Right? That's it. Oh, man. Yeah, that's its own whole speech, is how information is manipulated from people with machine learning and AI to actually future predict our decisions based on our past. I definitely have some stories there that we can keep.
Yeah, we'll definitely go down down the personal route here. And I think I didn't think we didn't go into this with it being on the outline to go over necessarily these nation state and infrastructure, but it is fascinating, and it identifies that. Yeah, if the government can't manage these things, and we're getting not only out-muscled, when you talk about 20-1 on the individual basis, as far as who's actively participating in this. And then it's just we have to trust that our systems and our infrastructure and everything is protected by probably an undermanned force that is, we're not playing necessarily on offense in the same way. And it's an arms race. Like, we're in this digital arms race. And like you said, you said it two or three times already, that it's more difficult or it's worse now than it was. But isn't that going to be true to the future? Like, doesn't every iteration of network security and all these things look worse than it currently is?
It always seems that way. And that's truly because of the ever-increasing rise of the importance of technology in our lives, right? Where, was it easier to hack systems back in the past? Sure, it was, but the data wasn't as chewy. It's a little bit more complicated to hack stuff, but the data is extremely worthwhile and impactful to our lives, right? So there is always a sense of it's getting worse, and that's really just because the targets are getting more and more tasty, right? And that's why it's getting worse. There's more and more people creating entire organizations that actually make tons of money, right? So it's definitely, political and money. And I have to mention Russia, if I mention China, because in the same light, how are they very scary? They are mind hackers. They are psychonauts. And their whole position is to destroy American democracy from within by disseminating false information and creating bipartisanship. That is their gambit.
Social engineering.
And we're not.
And that becomes overwhelmingly easy by knowing everybody's data points and by being able to build these personal profiles from past behavior to predict future behavior. We talked about there was a documentary on Netflix called The Great Hack about what Cambridge Analytica was doing. How that information is just so easily manipulated into, data points to actually predict people's behavior. And what we found interesting was that they weren't trying to go after the people that were 100% sure about this or 100% sure about that. But with the data, they were able to find the people that were right in the middle on the fence and just easily pushed to one side or the other. And just to be able to know specifically, that much detail about a person is very scary nowadays.
It's super scary. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because I was going to mention it if you didn't. But I think that's the most egregious thing that has happened to humanity in the last couple of years is the Cambridge Analytica scandal, because it truly shows you how bad it can get and how powerful the information that we put online can be, right? To where these systems will, and I sell machine learning language systems to my government entities today to protect themselves, but they can very easily be turned around, right? And that's where hacking in the future will eventually be AI versus AI. But where it stands right now, these systems are so powerful to say, if you have, right? And then AI is going to be trained be trained to kill humans, and then we're all going to die, and then Skynet. But but these systems are so powerful because if you have a large amount, a large enough amount of data about some past, and they say, what is it, about 3 years of Facebook posts, we can 99% predict how you will react to future events. So just like a hurricane, you know, these weather models that we have where, man, there's a hurricane out there. We have 8 different engines and it all predicts this is what's going to happen. Just like that, this machine learning language engine will say, this subset of group, you know, this hurricane's not going to hit America. We don't care. This one, you know, will stay in the ocean. We don't care. But there's this sweet spot that certain conditions may make somebody sway one way or another. And they'll actually input in this system to say, all right, 6% of the people may actually change their decision, period. How will they change it? We can actually experiment. We will throw in a certain condition, a certain why, a certain change to the system. We will see how the computer reacts. What is the probability of that reaction? And then we know specifically how to tailor our conditions. Whether that information is true or not, it doesn't matter. It's what information will sway the hearts of these people that are actually swayable. The computer predicts 99% chance that this group will be swayed by this. That's what we're going to use, and that's what we're going to put in. And it's legal at the time, except for the amount of data and how they accepted their ELA wasn't legal. But that is legal, where if I accept to buy into this thing, such as Facebook, and I accept this app, that is something that they can do. And a lot of people don't realize how powerful that is and how that could be used against us.
Well, we had said, I think most people just assumed that, like, okay, they're taking my data, and it's really just like that little bit of information I put on my bio, where I went to high school, you know, what my likes are, dislikes are, you know, what my occupations are. I don't think people realize that they had such powerful tools to scan every post, every word in every post, every picture that you ever posted, and take keywords and put together this profile of not just, you know, your favorite movies and things like that, but very detailed psychological profiles of people, you know, based on the fact that they're not looking at that public information. They are scanning every letter that you typed on Facebook.
And then we jokingly this week talked about how Google just bought Fitbit, and we're just supposed to trust that they're not going to overlay now our health data and our biometric data and our heart rates and everything else and overlay that somehow and further exploit things. I mean, everything is out there is a grab to just further build, what like Edward Snowden recently referred to as the perfect profile, that all these companies are trying to build the perfect data profile of every single citizen. And then we just got to trust that they're going to ethically manage that.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of butterflies in the stomach from that. And I think there should be, and I don't think there's enough out there of people getting concerned about this, because a lot of people say, oh, what could be the big deal? You know, everything's public anyways, or I'm not big fish. What does this matter? This matters. I mean, people can literally predict how you're going to act in the future and exploit who you are as a core person just from these little inputs online. And it's amazing. If you have enough small bits of information, it makes a complete picture. A lot of people don't even realize how powerful the like button is on Facebook. I could not post a thing on my Facebook wall, not a thing in my bio. If I just have 3 years of what I like and what I see but I don't like, I can build that profile extremely accurately just from that one condition, just from a like or not.
I'm throwing sad faces and all kinds of crazy shit now. I'm just gonna throw off the profile. Yeah, I'm gonna just be laughing at sad shit, but I'm gonna go fully oppo
hearts,
on everything.
Hearts on news stories of kids dying.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna fuck with my profile. Nobody's gonna get me.
Do it.
No.
Or you know what? Make sure your profile doesn't link back to your actual name or who you are. Right? You can build an online profile of this fake person. But once they start to connect the dots of your IP address and who you are and this phone number, then they, hey, this fake person is this person, actually. As long as they can't link it back to you.
Well, and that's what we said was the scary part about Google buying Fitbit, is now that they can correlate timestamps with what my heart rate is with timestamps of when I posted this post or read this post or hate it, you know. So this, so now they're going to be able to build heart rate profiles. They're going to know how long I'm sleeping. They're going to know my calorie burn, and with all the timestamps and metadata that goes along with those data points, build some kind of even crazier profile, you know, that, and I don't think people realize about, you know, predictive behavior as much. You know, there are studies where they can put people in a room and give you five choices, A through E or whatever, and then manipulate that room in a way with pictures, paintings, temperature, lighting, and things like that, to where they know you're going to pick B every time. They'll put 15 people in there and 15 people will pick B just on the way they manipulated the environment. And that goes into predictive behavior, which is exactly what our data points are building.
Yep. And that gets into biohacking. And I have a really good story. A couple years ago, there was an incident where a senator was known to have epilepsy, and someone sent them an email with a GIF that specifically causes epilepsy. So imagine, and luckily it did not trigger an epileptic episode, but he was tried for the attempted murder of this person because of knowing his biological flaws and trying to exploit them. Imagine they run on a Fitbit, and this is, you know, they're not doing this hopefully, but this is how bad it could get. They run a Fitbit analytic data and they say, wow, 5% of the population is prone to a heart attack. We can actually construct a fake post to try to maximize their chance of heart attack when they see this post. And maybe we could kill this subset of group because their heart is kind of looking from the data a little bit arrhythmic or weird. We can actually predictively say, hey, at least 80% of the people we send this to will have a heart attack right now.
All right. Calm down, Lex Luthor. Let's pull it back in. That's really fucking scary.
So I guess
maybe I shouldn't share that idea.
No, I wanted to ask, just because it bothered my head as we're talking about these companies and whatever else. And like, I'm thinking back to the last 5 years and how many different services and things that I've let my Google login be the authentication, or my Facebook, you know, how like everything that you go into now has, oh, well, you can create your own login or just link through
just
Facebook,
click that Facebook
button. And it's so fucking easy. And I don't know how many times I've done it before I really started giving a shit about these things. And I still don't know how many accounts I still have linked to this. And again, how much of that is it where it's now just, all right, whatever system you just logged into, Facebook is scraping all of that for whatever they need to.
Yeah, there's two problems with that, right? A link of trust. If I hack one system, I hack them all. And number two is all that information that you shared. And I always, the best use case of that is Pokemon Go. Did either of you play Pokemon Go?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The first week.
I did it in like foreign countries too.
The first week. Yeah. So, well, if you got at it the first week it came out, if you were like a bleeding edge Pokemon Go person, that first week it was a viral app. Over a million people downloaded it in that first week. This Chinese company, Ingenix, for that first week had full access to whatever account you connected to it in terms of data, calendar, email, contacts.
Well, they made you log in with Google. They made you log in with Google.
Yeah. Yeah. You had no choice.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Yep, so if you wanted to play Pokemon Go, you had to log in with your Google account.
Wow. So I didn't know that. I thought you might've had an option and a lot of people were defaulting to that, but that makes it even worse because in that, you know, a million people downloaded it in that first week. They of course changed they got a lot of heat and they changed their permissions after that first week, but over half of those Gmail accounts logged into with were tied to corporate email accounts that were actually intellectual property, PII, right? Over half of them were actually putting in their, you know, 'cause Gmail is what their company uses, right? So they put in their Gmail address, and then this Chinese company for that week.
And yeah, you don't want that spam coming to your personal account, so you put in your company account.
Yep.
Like, I don't want to get that spam on my personal email. Yep. The company could take all that spam.
Like, here's all my things. So good luck. And that's just giving China our IP, right? Like, that's crazy. My dad had a weather app on his phone. I got to say this, a weather app on his phone. had a full MDM. I found this weather app. He's like, yeah, it was down at the bottom. It looked like a good one. Chinese company, full access to all his camera, his microphone, all the data on his phone for all time. It was a weather app doing this. That was super scary.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask is, you know, there's so many apps in the App Store that we have no idea who's making these things. And, you know, I'm an Android user or whatever else, and the first thing that happens when I download a new app, it's going to give me 18 notification bars of, they want access to your calendar, they want access to your microphone, they want access to whatever else. And most people are just going to say, well, I downloaded you, I want to use you. I'm assuming I have to hit yes to all these things and accept them all. And we don't know who's causing them. Like I said, how you just talked about that weather app. Do you know of other examples of, you know, whether it's Russia, China, or any of these other agencies or areas of the world that we don't want gathering data, that they're using viral apps to do this? Like FaceApp, we know of. Oh, yeah. Everybody kind of heard of FaceApp as that happened.
Right? Yeah. That's a spot on thing. And there's many examples of this. And it goes into the play of, is the app itself malicious? Or is this just accepting a lot of data and we don't know where it goes? Because Apple will actually vet out every app that hits their store, but that weather app got in because it gave you the weather. Now, just because this weather app asked for ridiculous permissions for a weather app, it wasn't actually against their terms of service because they had no idea what this Chinese company was doing that with that information. And there's a ton of apps that exist both in the Android and iOS Play Store that will never be taken down because the app itself isn't malicious and it actually gets its job done. But the permissions, what it asks for, and all that data that it pulls back is just completely egregious and like out of the norm. They still let these apps in. So that's one family of these shady apps that are out there. The others are apps that actually are shady. The most recent Android one is a Mi keyboard that, if you really love emojis, it helps you type emojis with your keyboard. It also makes purchases that you didn't know about online completely silently in the background. Huge purchases and subscriptions. So it uses your credit card data on your phone, and all of a sudden you bought things you had no idea you did. So that's, and they tried to actually take those apps out. Apple can actually front end it. So Apple can actually take those apps out before they hit the market. Google, it's an open market. So these apps can actually hit the market before Google knows about it. That's one difference between the companies and why Apple gets less malware. Not to say one better than the other, but that's a reason why Apple actually vets out that there is no malware in their environment. But you betcha there's apps that are stealing stupid amounts of data and you have no idea what that company is doing with it.
So I've always wondered, you know, if everybody's taking our data and everybody's taking the same data points and the same things, what is it that makes it so valuable? Because there's got to be a lot of redundant information that all these people are taking. So if everybody's got the same information, everybody's got, you know, my height, my weight, my locations, blah, blah, blah. Who's buying the data? Who's selling the data? You know, it seems to me like if everybody's doing it, it would have no value.
Right. But not everyone is doing it. You know, certain big players are doing it, you know, like Google and your ISP, and they all have different perspectives on what you're doing, right? So your ISP, your internet service provider, can sell the web history of what you do at your house to marketers. And their perspective is, where am I going on the web with my DNS addresses? They're really looking at what websites I'm accessing from a domain level view. You know, certain other companies might not have access to this. You know, Apple really wouldn't have access to this unless I'm using it in Safari or something like that. Google has a very different perspective. They're inside your email, but they don't get to see every website that you go to at home. Unless you're using Google Search and you're logged into it, then they kind of are, and you always pivot through Google.
Or you're using Chrome. But
they're completing the full picture, right? So everybody has a different piece of the pie. There is some overlap out there, but it's also completing a more and more picture over time, where just because my picture looks pretty good today, I can always add to it and get better over time, just adding more and more of my history and how my mind works. So it's a... You know, they all don't collect the same thing. They're trying to build your profile in a different way. And Fitbit's just another source of data, right? Where it's like, yeah, we knew all the websites that they went to and all the emails that they sent and all the calls they made, but we have no idea what their body's doing when all this happens. Let's get that data point, right? And eventually they're just going to, you know, get to that Edward Snowden level view of where, you know, physically, mentally, and emotionally, they know who we are because of our past. We put enough likes and information online to where they can essentially map how we will be in the future. And that's just wrong, I think.
So now that you've scared the bejesus out of everybody and we're all wearing our tinfoil hats now, let's get into some of the things that us as consumers can be doing and us as, you know, companies and things like that can be doing to kind of mitigate some of these things.
We got to trust that the white hat nerds like you are out there protecting the infrastructure, but nobody's protecting me at home or my data and my bank accounts. Yep.
No, that's really true. And, you know, this is a common question I get, you know, what are the top things I can do from a security standpoint? And, you've already actually called out of them. You know, you guys are up on it. You guys called out some of them already. And one I'll speak to initially is authentication, because the number one way that I'm going to hack somebody is going to be credential theft, right? I'm going to emulate who you are, because a lot of computer systems aren't looking for legitimate people. They're looking for illegitimate people, right? If I'm, if my Gmail gets hacked and gets logged into from a really weird country, Gmail might let me know about that and say, hey, you logged in from Ethiopia. We've never seen you log in there before. Is that okay? But if somebody steals your credentials and logs in from America, that's going to be completely under the radar. So in terms of proving who you are, that's a big push in today's world, is how can we go beyond the password? One thing I'll say first and foremost, those connections where they have you log into a portal and you can log in with another portal to access that portal, I would avoid those for the most part. Again, everything I mentioned, you have to know what you're protecting, right? And I have a public Facebook account that is tied to my business that I do, that I won't link anything to. And I have another one that I will, because I know if my business account gets hacked, somebody could actually deface publicly my standpoint, my career, and my reputation. Whereas my private account, it's really all my friends. And I could very easily say, hey, I was hacked. Sorry about that. But in the public realm, that looks really bad, especially as a computer engineer. So
especially you.
Right? Yeah. I have to be extra paranoid, because if I get hacked, you know, that's all my rep, right? So I have more security at home than any even medium-sized business needs. But that's what I'm
saying. Are you at the point of putting tape over your laptop cameras and things like that yet? Yeah. Or? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people ask, like, you know, is this phony? Is this actually a thing? Twofold why I do that. One, there is the existence of malware that can connect your camera without turning on the light. So that malware does exist out in the wild. And two, a lot of these stupid apps may ask for camera access and you don't realize it, and it's legitimately pulling your camera, right? So I have a little slider that I have on my computer just in case. Even with all the security that I have, it's, you know, it's kind of a good thing to do, but the little slider that's like plan Z, right? If somebody's hacking your camera that bad, you have a lot of other things to worry about other than getting nude pictures online, to be honest. But yeah, avoid any app that has you log into another app, because the chain of trust, I hack one place, you know, I can log into them all and read those permissions. If you do that, there's some things I do just for ease of use. Like I link.
Not going to do it. I'm not reading anything.
They're pretty much banking on American laziness and convenience, because they know that I don't want to type in my fucking email and some long password every time I log in. I just want to click a button and go. So like you said, a lot of the hack falls on human error. Are we a lot to blame for the accessibility to our data, you know, the fact that we're just too fucking lazy to not click a button?
Yep. That's a huge part of it. You know, part of it is definitely not understanding what's going on in the back end, but a big part of it is not even reading or understanding what's going on in the front end. You know, what we generally, you know, those boring things that pop up, or just trying to get our work done, are actually super important. And, we definitely, as a security industry, we need to do a better job of making it very easy to understand what's going on with, like, pictures and lights. You know, if there's a huge wall of text, you're going to get bored immediately. But if we can, you know, colorize it and make it graphic, you know, maybe we can get around some of that laziness. But no, spot on. A lot of it is it's yeah, it is.
We
it's,
are
it's,
the worst.
It's apathy, right? It's just it's taking advantage of how we know humans exist, and laziness is a huge part of that.
Well, and also, how does skepticism kind of play into this? So I've noticed over the last few months recently that hackers are starting to realize that people don't open emails. So they're starting to put in like the subject line, your package from Amazon has, and then you think to yourself, oh shit, I just ordered something from Amazon. It's not coming from an Amazon email. You click open that email and it's either an ad for something else or a call to action to click this link or whatnot. How skeptical should we actually be from, you know, when we get the email or, you know, email spam emails or spam phone call, robocalls and things like that?
Yeah. The skeptics there have to be extremely high. The sophistication of, and we call that a spearfish, which means a general email fish is you spread the manure out and you see what grows. A spearfish is I'm going to get that guy. That's my target. I'm going to learn everything I can about that guy. I'm going to go on all his social media. I'm going to figure out who his kids are, where his kids go to school, who is his boss, where his family members live. And I'm going to leverage that information against him. And a lot of hacker groups, they actually, this is crazy. One of the best hackers I ever saw in my life knew zero about computers. She was a school grade teacher and she won a hacking competition at DEF CON because she was a mind hacker. And criminal groups will use the combination of people who know the tech and people who know the people to get their job done. And the school grade teacher, she had 15 minutes to get a username and password of anybody in the company of IBM. And this was live. She did her homework for 24 hours. She had about 15 targets of people who worked for IBM at the layer that she wanted that also had a lot of public information about them online. They had their LinkedIn on, they had their Facebook. So she had her 15 targets. She arranged them in order of the amount of info that she could gain on them and their personal lives. And on her third target, she got it. And she used a combination of emotion and logic to say that, hi, I realize that your son goes to this school. I'm a nurse from the school. Your son has had a terrible accident. We're shipping him to this hospital. And, you know, we really need a parent guardian to be there. That is one call, an ancillary call from somebody in their IT department saying that, hey, I realize your manager, this, you had a request to go home for the day, you know, blah, 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 who works with you as your colleague. And they're calling out names. They know the names of who you work with and what their roles are, is going to take over your work for the day because they're a parallel colleague to you. Can you please give us your username and password so that they can continue the work and you can see your son? And the time, the emotion and the amount of information they had triggered them, right? And it's usually a combination of somebody's trying to pull, and that's where you can really be safe about what's trying to fish you. If something is trying to drive emotion in you, immediately take a step back, right? Because they're usually trying to throw you off your game a little bit to say, hey, you've overdrafted your bank, or hey, a package that got sent to you got lost, right? And I'm expecting a package, because your mind does a funny thing when emotion's involved and you actually skip some of those logic processes. So as soon as something actually drives emotion in me, that's an email, that's when my like scrutinizer hat goes on, because, you know, maybe they're trying to trick me like that. And that's a play. But yeah, I'll kind of share that's how good they're getting it, because some people, they don't even need to know about computers. I'm a people person, right? I don't know technology, but you damn well better believe I can be a very effective hacker, because the hacker says, hey, I need this person to open this. If you can get five people to open this attachment for me, you know, you're going to make X, Y, Z money. And they're saying, I could get people to open attachment. They have no idea what that attachment does, but they're actually extremely useful in a hacker group to get that person tricked. And,
and I was saying,
again, the tech is so strong that the weakest link in the tech is the human involved.
Well, it's the concept of like, you know, everybody hears about phishing scams, but phishing scams still work. And those are relatively low tech. I mean, it's not hard to just blast out emails to people, and it's not a tech-centered issue. It's a numbers game. You get enough email addresses and you send it out to enough people. All you need to do is deceive 0.01% of the million you sent out, and it was worth the time of putting it together.
Yep, that's how their mentality is, for sure.
So I wanted to talk about a little about secondary authentication. You know, is that something that we're going to start implementing to really kind of protect myself? Because I had a case where I have EA's All Access for Xbox. So I pay $30 a year. I get access to all EA's games. It's part of like the game subscription. And they have their separate login and password. And I got an email from EA saying someone in Poland was trying to log into my EA Access. Would you like to do secondary authentication? So I clicked yes, but I didn't change my login or anything because I wanted to see like how bad they were trying to get into my EA Access. I would get 4 to 5 text messages a day with an authentication code because they were trying to access my video game profile. And this is, you know, like, to me, nothing. Like, what the fuck are you going to do with my EA All Access? You going to play Madden? Like, you want to play Madden that fucking bad that you're trying to hack my account 5 times a day? But I was just shocked at the determination, you know, that they obviously had to known I put a secondary authentication thing on there, and it was tied to my text messages. So I just kept getting these, you know, 6-digit codes to type in, you know, after I put in my password, and I'm at work, you know, like, holy shit, like, these Polish dudes don't give a fuck, man.
You know what it probably was? It was probably an automatic script running in Russia, proxying through Poland to try to get at your account. And what are they trying to do? It's not just accessing your account, but if they can successfully authenticate, what is your username to log into that system? Is it your email?
Most likely, yeah.
Yep. So, and this goes into another advice that I have. 2-factor, really awesome. It's the future, and it plays into the mantra of we have 3 ways to verify that we should have access to something: something we know, something we are, and something that we have. So there's even talks about completely eliminating passwords in the future. So a password is something I know, something I have is biometrics. Or something I am is biometrics, and something I have is 2-factor, right? So in the future, we very well could just do something I am and something I have, not something I know. And there's some thoughts towards that where if I have a thumbprint and then I also have a 2-factor, should I just be able to get straight into something? And it's an interesting debate. But in that realm, you know, it's not only accessing your account, but it's, did you reuse this password? So a lot of people
have the same password for 5. Yeah. So if I can hack your EA account, most likely your email and your password for your EA account is the same email and password you have for your Chase banking account. And now I have access to all your funds.
So if I'm a hacker and I crack one of your codes, I'm going to take your username and I'm just going to go to all the services that I think you might use. And I'm going to try the same username and password and see what cracks open. So that could be another play that they're trying to do, but yeah, don't reuse passwords. If you do, only reuse part of the password. So a password manager is the best thing to have, right? It keeps track of your passwords for you. Yes, it's very rare. Those do get hacked, but it's very rare. They're generally safe. You can use a local one or a cloud-based one like LastPass, but you have to remember some of them. And my mantra there is you have a game where I have part of my password that is different for every place that I log into, but there's actually part of the password that is the same, and that helps me remember it. You can actually create your own code like that to say, you know, my banking websites will always have a certain prefix, but they're always going to have a unique suffix to my password. And that's a way to kind of clue yourself in to remember that. But yeah, 2-factor and never reusing passwords is huge because that's very well what they might be trying to do to you, Steve.
That's what I assumed, you know, and it was kind of an experiment I was playing. Once I put the 2-factor on, I felt a little safe and I wanted to see how hard they were going to come at me. And man, they did not give a damn. So how you said, if they get your username and password for one thing, they're just going to shoot it across the board. How fast are they able to, are there algorithms that they build that will literally, they hit one key and try to log into Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, Best Buy? But like, is it that easy for them?
It can be. And they have to know what you're logging into, right? So I've never heard of a script that will, I mean, it is, you could do like the top 100 most used services, right? That'd be an easy script to run. But usually it's a little recon. And that's the most important part of hacking is reconnaissance. It's knowing your target. And, you know, potentially if they can hack one place, like let's say they get into your Xbox account, is there anything inside there that tells them other services that you use? You might have a linked switch or Twitter, definitely the email address you use is a pivot point, right? So they're going to scrape as much as they can and then probably use that to do more targeted logins in the future. Because they won't guess everything that he is, but it's not hard to say, hey, he's in America. I'm going to try Bank of America, Chase, and Citibank. You know, those top three. That is definitely a thing that they could do. And one question I would have is, how do you get that two-factor, Steve? Is it like an email, or an SMS, a call, or an app?
It was a text message for EA. So I tied my phone number to it, and then they send me a text message with a six-digit code that I have to. So like Blizzard had their own app, you know, so me and Bill are old WoW heads. And before, you know, we both kind of took the needle out of our arm on that thing. They had their own app that refreshed what every 15 seconds. So you had to have it on your, yeah.
And that was awesome because guess what? SMS and phone calls for two factor aren't secure in today's world. So there are ways to spoof a SIM card and to actually...
Oh, fuck you, Bill. Jesus Christ,
texts
man.
Texts aren't even I'm encrypted. Thinking. Texts are
clear. my Amazon is cell phone authenticated. Everything's fucked.
Yep. So if you have a choice on two-factor, use an app or a code that you have to punch in. Because SMS and phone calls, completely spoofable in today's world. Somebody really wants to get you. And if I log into your account and ask me for a two-factor, what do I immediately know? My password worked, right? So
that was going to be my question.
Pretending to log in. Yeah. Yeah, they knew.
Yeah, they only get to the second step.
Worked, even though he didn't. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They're like, hey, at least that first step worked. So they could, you know, hopefully, Steve, that you didn't reuse that password or you changed all your passwords ancillary to that as soon as it happened because they did know that password worked for you.
I'll be gotcha. Right back.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, I think I'm pretty sure my EA was a really old because I bought that a long time ago and I've changed my passwords a few times since I think I logged into that. But that's one of those services that you sign up for, you do it once, and I never log into it. It's a 1 year payment, so it charges my debit card once. The app is on my Xbox, so the Xbox is what gives me access to it. I never need to log into it unless I need to change my debit card because my debit card expired and I need to upload a new card to it, you know? So it was just one of those apps. And that's what puzzled me really about why they were trying to hack it. Like, bro, just go buy Madden, man. It's not that expensive. Like, just go get it.
Right. But I almost guarantee it's not the games that get mad. Or maybe they could actually resell your account access on the black market. You know, like I got an Xbox login for $1,000. Well, I don't know if they charge that much, but yeah, there's a whole black market around reselling cracked accounts. And, you know, very well, somebody could just be trying to sell that saying that, yeah, I know this guy's username and password. I'm going to sell it and build a dark web profile on you and all that.
So we also hear a lot of people selling VPNs. Is there any benefit to using a VPN? Could you explain real quick what a VPN is and does for a common consumer?
Yeah, happy to help. So I think there's a lot of hype around VPNs because of privacy and trying to go against the government. But you have to trust the heck out of that VPN because whoever you're establishing this VPN with, they are on the end of your encrypted tunnel. They have visibility into all of your traffic. So there's some legitimate ones out there that are actually trying to do a good job. Proton VPN, of course, is one of them. And they are actually a legitimate service that will offer this. But there is 20, 30 VPN apps that they're very questionable, right, of where that data is going and where it's terminating. So it's use at your own risk. And in a corporate environment, it's very frowned upon because VPN is a way to go around security. So my ultimate advice is, you know, what are you trying to use VPN for? Often Tor or the Onion router will get the same job done in a different way. But a lot of people, you know, what do you think is the main use case of VPN, Steve? Is it worried about the government hacking you, or is it trying to get to a different countries of access?
Well, I thought a lot of it had to do with, you know, protecting your data points, maybe. You know, a lot of what your metadata is your location. And especially with your home, you know, you're sending out your IP. So basically everywhere you visit on your desktop, you're letting everybody know exactly where you live, for one. So that's, you know, it's a lot of a privacy issue, I'm guessing, with that. But I also didn't know if that VPNs also kind of played into just overall protecting you in a general sense from hacking, just because it kind of is masking, not necessarily who you are, but it's masking a little bit of kind of like your data.
Yeah. So there definitely is that play. They can be used for good and bad, right? Hackers can use VPNs to hide themselves, and you can use a legitimate VPN to protect yourself online. A lot of companies do this, but the whole key is just because that VPN tunnel is protected doesn't mean the endpoint, the termination point for that tunnel are protected. So if, like, when I leave my house, I actually VPN back into my house through the cellular network so that my cell phone's protected by all the stuff that I have at home. Completely valid VPN play. But if I'm, let's say, at a corporate environment or something like that, and I want a VPN to hide what I'm doing, maybe I'm doing peer-to-peer or something like that, a lot of these free VPN services are low-cost ones. The cost is actually your data being shared with this company, and they have all access to it. Where if you're just trying to hide the mapping of where you're going online to your IP address, Tor or the Onion Router browser can do that. Plus, you don't have to worry about where that traffic terminates, because generally it's spread out via this algorithm and it's randomized around the globe. So a VPN isn't randomized. You get to pick where the end of your tunnel goes, but man, you better trust the heck out of that company. It better be a publicly traded company or one that you pay for that's very well known, because you're giving them so much access to your data that, you know, it's kind of like, all right, I've hid myself from the government and my ISPs, but now this one criminal organization has access to all this information. Is that better?
I'm not sure. Yeah, and it's absolutely. And it's, again, it's something that VPNs, people hear about it or whatever else, and it's not fully known.
Yeah, they're being advertised on a lot of podcasts we listen to. Like, you're hearing a lot of advertisements for VPNs as of right now, as if they're kind of, you know, needed, you know, if you are on the internet, you know, now. Yeah. So, you know, we wanted to at least go over that a little bit.
No, people say, if I'm at a public place like Starbucks, do I need a VPN? For the majority of today's world, you don't. A lot of our websites use the same type of encryption that a VPN does. You know, if it's HTTPS and you got that padlock on the site, generally, you know, you're just as secure as a VPN. So I'd say they're probably overhyped a little bit in today's world in terms of, you know, the benefit that you get and the need that you have for them. Definitely still valid for a lot of use cases. But, you know, I think most people could get by on Tor and get the same job done, as opposed to a VPN, or, you know, get a really good one that you have to pay for where the company is actually legit.
And lastly, before we take up too much of your time, we can close off our 101 section and maybe have you back in a little while, and we'll do Tech 105 second semester. Everybody nowadays has a home network. You know, everybody has their own home routing system. We have probably anywhere from 3 to 10 devices that connect to your home Wi-Fi. I know I have all kinds of things. You know, my thermostat is connected to my network, my smoke detectors,
security,
I have light bulbs connected to my home network. What are things that, security cameras, all kinds of things. What should people be doing to protect their home networks, per se? Is, you know, not just their data, but their basic kind of dome bubble that protects their home?
No, that's a great question. And I have so many butterflies in my stomach for people who introduce those devices into their network that just do it blindly, because there's multiple instances of people build devices before they think of security, right? They're like, man, I made this new camera, let's put it out there and then we'll secure it. And that happens a lot. So the number one thing I can suggest that people can actually own that aren't super nerds like me is keep your software as up to date as possible on all of your systems inside. So the way that these devices could be exploited illegitimately, not talking about the way that Amazon and Google could exploit you, but a hacker could find a weakness in a piece of code in your environment, exploit it because this device talks to the internet, and then pivot inside of your network to some of the good data, right? So you could have a very out-of-date camera or IoT device or sensor. It's hacked, and then they're able to pivot into your Windows. But everything, you have to take advantage of a weakness in your system. And most weaknesses that are exploited are actually known in the world. And a lot of people don't realize this, that there are things called day zero exploits, which no one has found before, and they are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars online. Usually nation states get at these because they cost so much, but people get flubbed on delaying the update on Windows or delaying the update on the iPhone, because all those updates, half of it is features, half of it is security. And when that update hits, the entire world knows about this. So you can, so when this Apple, you know, somebody says, oh, I got the new Apple update, I'll do it in 3 days. Well, guess what? When that update comes out, I can go on the Apple's website and I can see all the weaknesses that they solved. And I'll know in my head as a hacker, wow, if people don't patch,
and it's not if people don't patch, you know there's a certain percentage of people that did not patch. So you know there's a certain percentage of people you can go after.
Yeah, so do not click the install later button.
Right? So yeah, definitely keep your software up to date. And if you can, some routers have this capability, like some of the nice ASUS routers you can get from some of the stores, where you can create what's called a DMZ, where you can actually separate your network so that, sure, I have devices that need the internet, but there's no reason for those devices to talk inside of my network. So you can put them on what's called a DMZ so that, yeah, internet, I'm good. But if somebody hacks a device, the blast radius is smaller and they won't actually get to my Chewy stuff. So, you know, look inside your router to see if you have this capability. If you do, you know, figure out how you can leverage it and keep those devices separate, but still get them internet.
Now, I didn't really understand half of what you said. So when I go into my router settings, I see the letters DNZ. I don't know what the fuck they mean. I don't know. You know what I mean? So is there a real big issue with making this kind of like common knowledge? Like, so as everything you kind of said is kind of like the digital equivalent of like deadbolts, screen doors, other things that we have on our home that we, you know, at one point what didn't exist, but we invented out of necessity, but is common knowledge. We all know what a key is. We all know how to open a door. How do we make the digital versions that simplistic for the common person to kind of like understand how they function and how to use them?
You know what I see is the hugest challenge there. It's the separation of technology and no standardization, to where one company could figure it out, where, you know, I throw up my router and it's going to ask me, hey, do you have IoT devices? Yes. And then it just does it for you on the back end, right? And it says, hey, connect your IoTs to this Wi-Fi, connect everything else to this Wi-Fi. It could be that simple, but it'll be one vendor that does it and it's not ubiquitous, right? So I don't have the right answer there, but there needs to be a standardization amongst all the products to make this easy, so that it's the same interface, it's the same experience as an end user. Because, you know, just because I figure it out on one portal doesn't mean it's going to work. You know, if you figure out your ASUS and I go to Netgear, it's a whole different world sometimes, right? So I think it's really the separation of technology. We really need to standardize it more and make it a little bit easier for people. But definitely the trust level you have in the company and where the company comes from is important. If you can't do that nerd stuff, that's a big thing.
Well, yeah, you guys stopped making routers for me, so I had to pivot to a different router company. I was a loyal Linksys guy, and then I remember you called me up one day, you're like, yeah, we don't make those fucking things no more.
Nope. We sold that off. So you're on your own.
I remember that day. I was like, well, shit, Bill. Thanks.
Yep. Got out of that play. But there's still some good ones out there that you can get at.
Well, Bill, I guess you know, we don't want to leave anything on the table here. We'll give you one last shot. Is there anything that you haven't covered yet that you find appalling that the average idiot like me is probably doing? Or do you think we've covered most of the bases here today?
The only other thing I'll mention is watch even what you plug your devices into. So there are hacks where if I plug the data USB port of my phone or device, what power. Is behind That's that it. Port, right? When I go into public spaces that have USB ports for me to charge on, yeah, like here's a public USB power. I always think about what's underneath this. Could I lift up this patch panel and insert a little device into this, right? So I always
use they're making the equivalent of what would be ATM scanners for phones now?
Exactly. It's possible. Oh, we've actually only seen this in the wild once. We've seen a Chinese, guess what, China? Chinese-based e-cigarette vendor. The USB cable that they included with their e-cigs had malware in it. So if you plugged your e-cig into a computer to charge, your computer got infected by that USB port. So
that's so sketchy because now you're saying
so my USBs have AIDS. My USB has AIDS.
Yeah.
How many, you know, 6 packs of chargers are people buying on Amazon from product manufacturers that aren't vetted? It takes nothing to put products on Amazon.
Or the gas station charges. You know, you forgot your charger at home. You're on a 2-hour road trip. You buy that $5 charger from the gas station that you didn't know was made in fucking China. Next thing I'm at the hotel. I plug my phone in and into my shit into my computer.
Just gonna let it all burn, Bill.
Yeah. Jesus
Christ, all gotta burn.
So I bring. What's the fix? You got to bring those power adapters, right? Where you plug it into the power port and then it has your own USBs and you trust that device. I don't plug any, if I see a public USB port, I'm like, nope. I take my power adapter, I plug it into the thing next to it and I plug my USB into that. That's what I would do. And then if you buy some janky, cheap, even just a cable from some shady country, don't plug it into your computer. Plug it into that power port because they can't hack the power port, but they, That'd be my second piece of advice that I'd offer, but that's getting a little tin foil hatty. Like the prevalence of these attacks is pretty low, but we have seen companies be called out for this. There's actually been a couple of Chinese companies that can't sell cables anymore because they embedded malware in the cable.
That is creepy. So. Yeah, that's
nope. That just blew my mind.
You can go to the Nerd Cantina merchandise page to get a well-formed tinfoil hat. And from there, Bill, we appreciate the time and the eye-opening conversation. Definitely went down some directions that we didn't necessarily anticipate. But we love all these things. We love talking about whether it's the nefarious nations that are out there, the vulnerabilities that exist, and then just how to protect ourselves or how to interact in this kind of challenging environment personally. So appreciate all the information you've given us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Thanks for your time. And like I said, we'll give it some time. We'll let technology do its thing and multiply 10x times. God only knows how many times over. And you can give us a heads up on the next kind of attacks that we should be bracing ourselves for and keep me up at night even longer.
Most definitely. Yeah. The space changes every few months. So I'm sure it'll be an even different story next year, but yeah, happy to help. Hope I didn't scare people too bad.
Hopefully you did.
Luckily,
hopefully you
fear
did.
Is still that's a motivator. Point, like really. That's
yeah. People have to wake up a little bit. You're not supposed to spread fear, but you need to be wise. Right. And it's really bad out there. It's worse than you think it is. It's not like, hackers level, the movie with Angelina Jolie and Zero Cool. But it's darn near close. So yeah, be vigilant, have a little fear, don't be paranoid, but definitely watch yourself out there. So.
And with that said, hack the planet.
Hack the planet. Hack the planet.
And that was our conversation with Bill Clay. Thank you for listening to this Cantina Conversation. We do hope that you had your eyes opened in some of these examples that were given and took away a couple steps that you'll actually implement to improve your own security. Since recording this episode, there have been articles released on known economic hacking that China has done to subvert the U.S. sanctions. Like, this stuff is not going away. So we will continue to pay attention to these things and bring you conversations like this as we see them beneficial. But as always, thank you for listening. And please consider supporting us over at patreon.com. Even a $1 donation goes a long way towards helping us continue this podcast and bring you conversations like what we had today. Thanks again. Talk to you next week, nerds.